Okay, we're starting here on the two dots on the top of Kuf Mem Bet Amud Aleph. Just before we start, quickly, the Gemara here is going to discuss today principles that we've seen before in the Gemara on Shabbat. One of them is what we call basis ledavar asur, something that's a base to something that otherwise is asur on Shabbat. Then we know that basis ledavar asur is asur. One cannot interact, one cannot carry. It becomes muksa, this basis ledavar haasur. Question of why a basis ledavar asur becomes asur is important, and it will become important in our sugya. We'll see why. So there are different opinions as to why a basis ledavar asur is asur. Is it because the basis takes on the properties of the isur that's sitting in it, and therefore it becomes asur? And even that you could say in one of two ways. You could either say that it itself becomes li shemlachto li isur, because it has isur on it and servicing the isur. That's one possibility. Or you could say that it now is asur because it becomes an extension of the muksa that's above it, subordinate to the muksa, and therefore it becomes an extension of the muksa. Or the other way to say it, which the Chumat Edition suggests, is that when you go into Shabbat, talked about this a number of times, each kli takes on a default status, and you can change that by having something in mind, by indicating that the kli should be for something else. By placing muksa on an item, you have now changed the status of this basis to something that's default, you won't move on Shabbat, because you've now put it out of your mind that you're going to deal with this kli. Why is this all important? Because today we're going to deal with the sugya of basis ledavar asur umutar. If you put some heter on there, then we know that the Gemara is going to tell us that basis ledavar asur umutar is mutar, that you can't move. The question is, what type of heter do you need on there? The type of heter you will need on there will be need to offset whatever you think the problem is with basis ledavar asur. So that's why I'm just giving a little background to basis ledavar asur, and from there we'll build the sugya. So the Gemara says, based on the Mishnah, the kalkala ve'evin tocha, you have this basket that has a stone inside of it. Why is it that you're allowed to carry it? Why is it that you're allowed to carry this basket around if it has a stone in it? The stone is muksa. The basket becomes a basis ledavar haasur. Therefore, you should not be able to engage with it on Shabbat. Dealing with a basket full of fruit. Now what do we have? We have heter, which is the fruit. We have iser, which is the stone. The Gemara suggests here that that would be mutar to carry. That's a basis ledavar hasur umutar. That's why you're allowed to carry it. Velishdinu lepere v'nishde le'evin. Why don't you spill out the fruit and the stone? V'niktratinu b'yadayim. And then pick them up by hand. Meaning that you could regather them. You could disperse. Everything is in the basket. Recollect the fruit into the basket and you'll be without the stone. What the Gemara asks here, and it's going to come up a number of times, the sugya shows you that the Gemara thinks that basis ledavar asur mutar is not the perfect way to deal with things. If you have a choice to get rid of the isur, we'd prefer that rather than carrying something that has a isur and heter in it. Unlike other things where we have, it's mutar to take them on Shabbat, and despite that they are using some sort of dispensation over here, the Gemara keeps saying, try to avoid it, try to avoid it, try to avoid it. The way the Ritva formulates it is, perish to chol zman sheyachol asod binyan shelo yitel tel ha'isur im ha'mutar, in lo letel tolo. As much as you can try to get rid of this isur, you're going to try, and that's what the Gemara is asking you to do here. So Gemara says, Kid Rabbi Eloi, I'm a Rav. Because here it's similar to the case, again, we're going to see this in 1 second, in the next piece of the Gemara, that we're dealing with Peirot HaMitanafim. Talking about fruit that is mushy, that would get dirty. So HaChanami V'Peirot HaMitanafim. Also our case over here is talking about fruit that's going to get dirty or ruined by spilling it out. That takes away the option of spilling it out and separating them, because if you spill them out, you'd ruin the fruit, and you can't do that. V'Leninirinhu Ne'urev. So let's pour them out. Either you could pour them out into another basket and the stone would stay behind, or the other way around. You could shake them around until the stone falls out. One of the two, you can do it in a way that gets rid of the stone. So you're in that area, you do it at tilt them in its side a little bit, get at the stone, or you get out the fruits into another basket. Now this answer seems to be starting from scratch again. This is a totally different answer and says, no, over here we're dealing with a basket that has missing a part to it, has a hole in it, missing a wall. The Evan Gufa Nasi Dofin Lekalkala. So that the stone itself now becomes a part of the basket. The reason you're allowed to carry this basket with the stone is because the stone is functioning as a basket now. It's basically lost its shame muksa because it's not functioning like muksa. It's not useless anymore. It became useful on Shabbat because it's a part and parcel of the basket. We've seen this again earlier in the Masechta, as regards to a stone in the bucket when you join the water. The question was, if it was used as a weight in the gourd to take it down into the water, if it was loose, then it remained muksa. If it was embedded in the gourd, then it wasn't muksa because it became part and parcel of the water bucket. So now this is where the Rishonim talk about question of basis ledavar aser and basis ledavar mutar. The Rashba over here says, why is it that the Gemara is going down this path? And then the Rashba says, I have other examples in the Masechta where we don't require this. He says, if the stone over here is insignificant, if it's so insignificant, then why do you need heter there at all? We have an example of that earlier in the Masechta with a dustpan that had ashes in it. Gemara says over there, what's the big deal? Pick up the dustpan even though it has ashes in it. Even though the ashes were davar asur, they were so insignificant that you can pick it up without any heter in there. So if it's insignificant, you shouldn't be able to pick it up. On the other hand, if it is significant, then it shouldn't matter if you put heter in there, because we have examples of money. Earlier in the Masechta, we had matbeot, money that was put on the muchni. Remember, we discussed this with the wagon under the wheel. The money was sitting on the wheel, and the wheel became basis ledavar asur, even though there was heter on the muchni. Despite that fact, the money made it asur to move this muchni. If that's the case, if this is so significant, then adding heter shouldn't make a difference. The Rashba actually does is comes up with three categories of basis ledavar asur, and he says the heter will only help in one of those categories. There's a category where you have something of isur that's insignificant. Over there, you don't need anything else. That's sufficient to say you can carry the item, like the ashes inside of the dustpan. You have another category where the muksa is so significant that you can't override it. You can't change the fact that this is a basis davar asur, even if you put heter in there. That's like money, coins that are in the basket, coins that are on something, that even if you put heter on there, it's not going to help you anymore. There's this in-between status, and that's what the Gemara is discussing here, is a stone. If you have a stone in the basket, then it's not so significant, but it's also not insignificant. So there, if it's by itself, it causes the basket to be a basis ledavar asur. If you bring in heter, then the heter can override king b'vatel the stone, and then you'll have a basis ledavar asur umutar. Ah, oh, so very good. That's the main question. Right, that's the $1 million question. The Ritva, on the other hand, says, Afilu mide da'alma. So here the Ritva gives the first answer to your question, which is, the heter can be anything. There is no relationship between the Easter and the heter. As long as you have any heter there, the Ritva says, it's okay, you're ready to go. You can move it. There's no value equation between them. There's no significance equation between them. Any heter whatsoever, you can carry a basis davar asur heter. Most of the other Rishonim or Achronim believe that you do need some sort of equation between the heter and the Isur. We had that early in the Masechta as well, when you had in that same sugya with Shivrei Eitzim, with the Eitzim that are together with the Kitma in the dustpan. Over there, the Gemara says that it was a galonita. The reason that it was so significant in that place is because the ptilot, the leftover ptilot, were galonita. There Rashi and Tosafot argue about what that is, and it impacts on this sugya. But the two possible equations of what you need here is either you need heter that on a value basis is equal to the isur. That's one way to frame it. The other way to frame it is it has to do with the person's interaction with the item. It's not an objective standard of value. It has to do with the person's subjective value that he would place on this item. So if you need this more, that gives it more significance, even though it has less value. That's suggested by the Rabbeinu Tam, the Rivash takes a similar approach, that it has to be, heter has to be more valuable than the sur, but it's a heter that is determined by your subjective value, your subjective assessment of the item. Now you could connect to what I said before, the reason that a bus is a davar asur is a sur to the need for the heter over here. If you really believe that a bus is a davar asur becomes a sur itself, the basket itself becomes a sur, just because you have heter in there doesn't really help you out. Doesn't do anything for you because the basket's taking on the properties of the sur because of the significance of the sur. Therefore you would require a heter that was objectively just as good or better than the Isur in order to change the fact that it's being mevatel the Kli underneath it, or it's making the Kli beneath it Asur. That might be the approach of Rashi and others that say that you need a real value equation that says, relative to the Isur, the Heter is more valuable. On the other hand, if you believe that the whole problem here is your mindset, how you interact with the item, and is that you're mevatel midatcha, this item, because there's Isur in it, now, if you put in something that's Heter, that is more significant to you, then going into Shabbat, you're not going to put this item out of your world of Shabbat. Because you have something in there that you really want, even though it's less valuable than the Yisur, but you want it on Shabbat, you're not going to put this Kli out of your mind. And you would take that to the extreme with the Ritva. The Ritva says any Heter in there already brings it into your world of Shabbat. And that's why you don't need any equation between the Yisur and the Heter. This comes up on Shabbat with regards to putting the candles on the table and not making the table into a basis ledavar Asur, because once the candle's on them, they become a basis l'davar asur. The suggestion of the Rivash, in others, is to put tala on the table or on the candlestick tray. Question is, does that work? Does that help you? Because the challah is obviously worth less than the candlesticks, and therefore, why is it that it works in this situation? So many suggest that it's because the challah is more significant to you. Since the challah is more significant to you, because you want it for the seudah, then that makes the equation that the challah is on par with the candlesticks, and that takes away this basis of davar asur. One of the things that Mishnah Berurah mentions, other mentioned that the only thing that's asur in the candlesticks is the flame. So the relative value is not against the whole candlestick, because that candlesticks are also a basis of davar asur. The relative equation is between the isur and the heter. The isur here is a flame. The heter is the challah, and that's an easy equation to make. That's one of the suggestions. The other is that the Rivash makes a suggestion that it's the equivalent of making a tanai. You're allowed to, going into Shabbat, make a tanai on, for instance, candlesticks, that when the candles blow out, you'll be able to move them later on. You can make a condition. The Shulchan Aruch passes, you can make such a condition. The Ramah says you cannot make such a condition, where it can turn ois muksa middle way through Shabbat, if you intend that way up front. So the Rivash suggests that this works based on the Ramban, suggests that you make a tanai. That putting the challah on the tray is as if to say, then when I go into Shabbat and the candles blow out, I don't want this to be Asur anymore. So that way, not only do you have the Heter there, you elevate the Heter against the Isur, because the Isur is going to disappear later on, because you put this condition in it. B'shat HaTzchak, we rely on that tonight. Others mention also the problem of maybe on Ben HaShemashot, when you make the Muksa, the most important item for you, Ben HaShemashot, is the candles. Because you need candles lit at Ben HaShemashot, you don't need challah at Ben HaShemashot. You need the challah for the Suda later on. So therefore, they want to argue that the candles are more important, and you can't use this hat there. Again, the Magen Avraham, the Mishnah Berurah argue against that and say that this works. The Mishnah Berurah paskins that you can put the challah in, and most of them suggest you should put the challah in there first. We put the challah down first, because then that definitely sets the standard for what this is, and then only later on you bring in the candles. So it stands the thing as a davar het there first, and then only add the Easter later, which is a better setup or better scenario than putting the Easter first and then the het there after the fact. That comes up in terms of the question, can you put het there on after Shabbat starts? If there's Easter on it, can you make it a basis davar asur mutar after Shabbat starts? Most everybody agrees that's not the case. You cannot put it on. The only case where it might work is where the thing became muksa in the middle of Shabbat. Where you have a muksa, that what's called muksa the chatzi Shabbat, something that becomes muksa in the middle of Shabbat, where we're choshesh for the shitot there. In that instance, since the muksa only came into existence, so the bustis only came into existence during Shabbat, we would be the hakel to put on heter on Shabbat itself, in order to make it a bustis davar asur mutar, b'shat atzorech, if he really needed to move it. Yeah, exactly. Anything that is holding it up becomes a part of the bustis there. So there, the tray will be asur, and so will the table. They'll both be a bustis davar asur. Could separate. I mean, if you put the challah on the tray versus the challah on the table, it would make a difference about which buses you are being matir. Right? If you put the challah on the tray, you, then it'll help the table as well. Right. But if you put it on the table and not the tray, then the tray will remain asur, just the table you can move now. Mitaltalim truma. You're allowed to carry truma on Shabbat. Amar of chista lo shana elish tohora lamata utmei alamala. This reflects what I just said before, but we have an option to avoid. But since the davar asur mutar, we're going to avoid it, and that's what the Gemara is doing right now. She says this is only true when the tohora, the truma tohora, is on the bottom, and the truma tmeya is on top. So in order to move the truma tohora, you got to move the truma tmeya. If you have Truma Torah on top and Truma Tmeah on the bottom, shakalei the Torah, v'shakalei the Tmeah. Just take off the Torah on the top. What are you bothering to carry the Tmeah for? Just take off the top layer, which is the stuff that you want, and walk with it. Why do you have to get involved with the Easter at all? V'chi Torah lamato, nami. Even though the Torah is on the bottom, why is that okay? Lishdinu v'lint kedinu. Spill it out, and then you'll leave the Tmeah behind, and you'll pick up the Torah. So Amar Rabbi Elai, Amar Rav, this is the original part of this statement which we co-opted to use in the previous Gemara, which is, Beperot, Amit Anafim, Askinan. We're dealing with fruits that would get dirty, and therefore you can't just spill them out and take what you want and leave behind what you don't want. Here we have a brayta that is explicit. We have Truma Torah and Tmeah in a single vessel, or Truma, Tmeah, and Chulin in a single vessel. Obviously, the Chulin and Torah are mutar to use on Shabbat. The Tmeah are not being mutar to use on Shabbat. And yet, the Braita says it's irrelevant whether it's on top or the bottom. You're allowed to move the Kli. And that undermines the thesis of Rav Chista, who just suggested that the difference between being on top and the bottom is whether you have this Heter. If it's on the bottom, then you have the Heter, because you're going to have to move the Tmeah anyway. So therefore, you can pick up the whole kli and move it. And then if the Torah is on top, just pull out the Torah. Why are you moving the Tmeya? So Amar Lecha Rav Chisda, Rav Chisda says, you know, you're making a mistake. You're matnita l'tzorach gufo, braita l'tzorach mikomo. Our Mishnah is dealing with a heter of tzorach gufo. The braita is dealing with a heter of tzorach mikomo. There are two reasons why you might want to move this item over here on Shabbat. You might want to move it because you want the Truma Teorah. That's tzorach gufo. There's another reason you might want to move this is because you want the space where it's sitting. You want to move this out and you want to utilize the space where it's sitting right now. So the difference will be when you use or utilize these heterim, how does that impact on what you're allowed to move? If it's for Torah Gufo, then your focus is solely on getting the Truma Teorah. That's our Mishnah. And that's what Rav Chisda qualified and said, well, if all you're interested is in the Torah, if the Torah's on top, just take the Torah out and you'll get what you want without engaging in the Tmeya. On the other hand, if it's on the bottom, you have to engage with the Tmeya anyway, so we'll allow you to lift the whole Kli and move it over. On the other hand, the Braita is saying that you want it to tzorach mikomo. You want the Truma Torah out of here because you want to clear the space and use it. Well, that's not going to suffice to take out the Truma Torah. If you want the space, you want the Truma Tmeya out and the Truma Torah out. So in the case of tzorach mikomo, it won't matter whether it's on Torah's on top or on the bottom. You want everything out. Then better to carry the Kli with the Heter and the Isur in it than to separate the two. Because by separating the two, it's not going to help you. Then you have the Isur by itself, and that may be more problematic in terms of moving it. So then, in Tzorach Mekomo, it's irrelevant which way it's set up, you can move it out. But that means that Rav Chisda is suggesting there are Mishnah as a case of Tzorach Gufo, and that's what the Gemara asks now, my ducha ke de Rav Chisda l'upmei matnitan l'Tzorach Gufo. What pressed Rav Chisda to say that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Tzorach Gufo? How does he know that? Maybe our Mishnah also is talking about a case of Tzorach Mekomo, and it should be mutar in both instances. Amarava matnitan kavate daiko. Our Mishnah, you could infer, deduce from the Mishnah that he is correct. That is, diktani seifa, because the latter half of the Mishnah says, ma'ot shakar, if you have money that is on a pillow, minna eretakar, vehein no float, you shake off the pillow, and the money falls off. Va'amar rabar barchan, am rabbi yochanan, lo shano elo litzorach gufo. That's only true if it's tzorach gufo. Aval letzorach mikumo metaltolo v'odan alav. You can move it with the money on this. We've spoken about this also before because when you have the money on the pillow, if you want the pillow, and that's all that you want here, then we opt for you dumping the money because that's tiltum in atzad, get rid of the muksa, and then you carry the pillow without any problem. On the other hand, if it's tzorach mikumo, dumping the money doesn't solve your problem anymore, because you want the money and the pillow out of here. So we tell you, carry everything and take it out. So that's the case of the Seifa. In the Seifa, it's clear that the qualification is that it's a Tzorach Gufo case, and that's why you're dumping the money. Well, if the Seifa case is a case of Tzorach Gufo, may the Seifa the Tzorach Gufo, Reisha Nami the Tzorach Gufo. And it makes sense that Rav Chisda would suggest that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Tzorach Gufo. Rav Yehuda Omer, Af Ma'alin, you're allowed to take out the Truma from Dimua on Shabbat. We discussed this again yesterday in the Mishnah. Dimua is a case where you have Truma and Chulin mixed up. Mida Torah, again, if the Chulin is the Rov, then it's Mevatel, the Truma, and you could eat this, there's no problem with it. Mida Rabbanan, they imposed a higher threshold on mixtures, including Truma, that they have to be at least, whether it's 100 to 1 or 101 to 1, of Chulin neged the Truma, in order for the Truma to be batel. The basic thesis is, what falls back in is the amount that you would separate, that's enough to make it problematic. So that's a general principle they use here, and therefore it's 100 to 1 by Truma, and by things like Orla and Gilaim, it's 200 to 1. Those are midrabanan, what you need for bittul. So over here, he has less than 100 of Chulin, and the Truma falls in there. Now we have Dimua. Dimua may not to be eaten until midrabanan, you pull out the Truma that fell in. So if you have one sa'ah of Truma that fell into this mixture, you have to pull out a sa'ah, make that into Truma, give that to the Kohen, representing the Truma that fell in there. And then afterwards, the Dimua is fine. Again, midoraita, this whole thing is fine. It's an imposition to Rabbanan. And again, the imposition includes removing Truma from it. So what Rabbi Yehuda suggests in our Mishnah is that you let us separate out that Truma on Shabbat. And the question is, why? Amai, why can you do that? Hakamitakein. He now makes the food edible on Shabbat. And we know you're not allowed to take off Trumot and Masrot on Shabbat for exactly this reason. You're changing the status of the food to edible from what before was a sur. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eliezer, Svirlei. Rabbi Yehuda holds like Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara is going to make three suggestions as to which opinion Rabbi Yehuda is following. First try is Rabbi Eliezer. Ta'amar truma be'ena machto. So he says that the truma is sitting there, literally. That means that whatever you pull out is literally the truma that was supposed to come out. It's waiting for you. As if it's waiting for you. It's not. But Mishnah, sa'a truma, shnafla pachot mi me'a. They have a sa'a worth of truma that fell into less than 100. Vid nid mi'u. They become dimor now. Nafal mina miduma ala makom acher. And then from this mixture, it falls into another location of chulin. B'leaz omer midamat k'trumat vadai. He says it's the equivalent of whatever falls out. That's the truma, and it's as if it's truma vadai. V'chamim amrim. Ina miduma midamea elofi cheshbon. It only works on a ratio or relative basis. So the chachamim are easy to understand. If you have one sa'ah of truma that falls into 50 of chulin, and then that mixture falls into more chulin, we don't say that you now have a truma vadai. We say that you have a mixture of 1 to 50. And whatever falls in is now in that relationship or ratio of 1 to 50. And then you now look at the new chulin that it falls into. If in the new area that it falls into there's 50 chulin, and this mixture falls in, then you'll be mevatel it, because now you have 100 chulin neged the truma. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's as if that truma is sitting separate from the chulin and not mixed in. If that's the case, when it falls in, it's as if you have now this truma falling in by itself to the mixture, the new mixture, or whatever it falls into. So we look at the truma as if it's truma vadai, because you have to take off truma now, and that truma that you're going to separate becomes like truma tvadai, and that truma vadai, when it falls into the new mixture, then it's oser, as if you have truma vadai there. Because of that, if one sa'ah falls out of this basket into another grouping, if you only have 99 chulin, it won't work. That's it. You're back to square. We have one truma against 99. It doesn't help you. But what you see from Rabbi Eliezer is, as if the truma is separate. It's as if the truma is sitting as a separate entity. Because that's why it's called truma vadai here, because we don't consider it to be a mixture or a ratio. We consider it to be separated out. Because you have to separate out truma from this group, it's as if the truma is sitting there and is be'en. According to the Chachamim, if sa'ah comes out of it, that means 1/50th of that sa'ah is truma. The other 49/50ths are chulin, like the nature of the mixture, like the ratio of the mixture. According to the Eliezer, that one sa'ah that falls out, that was the sa'ah that you were supposed to take off for truma. Well, if that's the case, the suggestion of the Gemara is that Rabbi Yehuda is subscribing to the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Therefore, on Shabbat, you're not metakein. The truma is sitting separately. It's already as if separated. It's sitting by itself. So that's not metakein. You have the truma here. You have the chulin here. You're just taking what's already separate. You're just separating them more. So the Gemara asks Roni's question. Wait, imar deshmaile the chumra the kula mishmaile. Who says Rabbi Eliezer would extrapolate or extend that din to something that is the kula? He's saying the chumra, where it'll cause more dimua. It'll be like truma that causes a problem for bittul. But who says he would say it the other way around, which is when you say, oh, the kula too, you can take it out on Shabbat. He never says that. The only statement from Eliezer is putting it the tzad chumra. Maybe that's where he says it. Maybe he's choshesh for that problem, and therefore he'd only say it the chumra, but not the kula. Ella, here's our second suggestion as to who Rabbi Yehuda is holding like. The Amar to Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Rabbi Shimon. That's Knan. Tzad chuma shenafla the me'a. If a tzad that falls into 100, v'lo he speak lag bia ad shenafla acheret. You weren't successful at taking that out, or the representative chuma out, before another one falls in. Harizu asura. That is problematic and asur. Rabbi Shimon matir. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. Now, why does Rabbi Shimon say mutar versus the Tanna Kamma says it's asur? So the difference again will be how you view the mixture that's there. So according to the Chachamim, you have a mixture. Now we have 1 to 100. The next one falls in. Now you have 2 to 100. And you have a mixture that's mixed up, and now you have a problem. It's a surah, because it went from 1 to 100 to 2 to 100, and now it's a surah. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Shimon, one falls in, we look at it as if it's separate again. We look at it as if what the chuma that you need to take out is already separated, and when the next one falls in, it's falling into the chulin that's there, the 100 chulin that's there, and it has no relationship to the first chuma that fell in. I would have said it that way. The way I would have phrased it, and this is not the way the Gemara is learning it, clearly, I would have said that by the Chachamim, they say it's Choser V'Neor. The one that fell in is still there, and then the second one falls in, you have 2 to 100, and you have a problem. According to Rabbi Shimon, the first one fell in, it's Batel. It's no longer a Shuma, it's part of the 100 now. And then when the next one falls in, it's Kama Kama Batel. Problem is, that's not what the Gemara is after. The Gemara is after having this Shuma be separate. And that's why the way Rashi explains it, and the way that the Gemara lays it out here, is that the Chachamim believe that it's a mixture, and then when the next one falls in, it continues to be mixed together. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, views the Shuma as being isolated, not in the mixture. Therefore, when the second one falls in, it's batel, because the truma is already separated out. The first truma that's there is as if taken out already. And now you just have the chulin left, and then it falls into the chulin, and it's mevatel the chulin. Again, the Gemara is after the fact that if it's already separated out, or if you view it as separated out, then you should be able to take it off on Shabbat. And here it's the tzad kula. Rabbi Shimon is matir in this case, and so it's the tzad kula, so maybe this should work as our basis for review of this position. The Gemara says we might. Dilma b'hotam kalka miflige. But this is what they're arguing. The Tanna Kamma says, Rafa gavdan afnu b'zeach ha'zeach ha'mandan afal b'vat achat. Tanna Kamma believes even if they fell sequentially, It's as if they fell simultaneously. So this one fell into 50, this one fell into 50, and therefore it's not Badel. First one was Batel when it fell into the 100, and the next one has 101 to be Mevatel it. So similar to the suggestion that David made before, the way that I would have explained Breita, this is the way, but the Gemara is obviously trying to get to something else, and it comes around to what we would explain the Breita is, that Rav Shimon's opinion is kama kama batil, and the Chachamim's position is, you see it as a mixture, and since it's a mixture, therefore it continues to be a mixture, and now you have 2 to 100 instead of 1 to 100. What you do see here, by the way, Tosfot points it out, Rashi makes the same note over here, there's a machloket arishonim in other places like Perkid and Asheh as to how much chulin you need neged the truma. When we say that it's 100 to 1, does that mean you need 100 chulin to 1 truma? Does that mean you need 101 chulin to the 1 truma? Because then you have excess of 100 over that. That Rashi over there says it's 101 to 1 instead of 100 to 1. This Gemara is almost explicit that it's 100 to 1. Because the example the Gemara brings over here is that it's 100 to 1. And it's batel. It's only when it gets to the second one that it becomes problematic. So you see from this Gemara that it's 100 of chulin to 1 truma is what is mevatel. Ella Hudamar, here's our third attempt at getting Rabbi Yehuda a basis for his position. He holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, notenin ab mitzad zeh v'ochel mitzad acher. You don't have to actually physically separate out the truma or the maaser in certain instances. You can simply eat from one side and say that the truma and the maaser are on the other side, and you won't be mafrish them. So now you're not being mitakein then because you don't even have to take action. You don't have to actively remove the truma from it. You just leave it in there, you eat it, and the truma and the maser are left behind.
As if they're separated, but you're just not.
Correct. It's a heter because we're dealing trumot and masrot de rabbanan, and therefore you could take it off what we call the mafreya retroactively. That is today in modern day kashrut, many of the organizations rely on that because the mashkiach who takes the trumot and masrot gets there and there's already fruits and vegetables been shipped out from the wholesaler or from whoever has them. So he takes off trumot and masrot le mafreya retroactively. He takes them off when he gets there on everything that was shipped out already plus what was still in the warehouse. Generally, we rely on this when we're dealing with Shmot and Masrot, me, Derabanan, being with Starif the Raivud, who thinks there may be no Kedushat Aretz anymore today. So using a tzira for these items, a lot of Kashan organizations rely on this fact that you can do it le mafreya. If you want to be makpid, you should just go after the Mashkiach gets there, and then you won't have that problem, because he would have been ready mafrish to Shmot and Masrot before you've gotten there, and then you won't have this issue at all. So then, whereas there is Omi Savar Leikavate, does Rabbi Yehuda really subscribe to this position of Rabbi Shimon Lazar, he argues directly on him. I mean, that we have a machloket between them and a brayta, the Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Malinet Meduma Bechad Umeya. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Meduma, our case here, you can pull out the Truma from a mixture. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Notenina Bitzadzev, Ochel Mitzad Acher. So you can put your eyes on this side and then eat the other side. So here you have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Elazar arguing explicitly in the brayta. So how can you say that Rabbi Yehuda is built on the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? The Gemara says, yes, that's exactly what it is. The Rabbi Yehuda Adifa mit Rabbi Shimon Elazar. He's Rabbi Shimon Elazar plus. His argument is not on the principle of Rabbi Shimon Elazar. He's Mekel more than Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that you can just say it's if. The Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, I look at it as if there's some left on this side. I'm visually separated, or I just think in my mind that it's separated, and that's enough. Because I never actually make the separation. And since I can do it in my head, I can eat it on Shabbat, because I'm not really being metakein. The tikkun happened by just thinking. And therefore, it's not a problem. Rabbi Yehuda goes one step further and says, since you can do it in your head, you could also physically do it. Since you could have done it in your head, and that would have been fine, so the stuff is already mitukan. So now when you go and physically take it out, you're just taking it out for something that's already mitukan. So he takes one step past from Shimon Lazar and says, well, if you could do that, then you can physically do it because the physical action doesn't have significance anymore once you can do it in your head. So he is built on top of this position of Rabbi Shimon Lazar, and that's the explanation of Yehuda's position in the Mishnah. Right now, we have a Mishnah that we quoted earlier in the Masechta, that we dealt with extensively earlier in the Masechta, which is Eben Shalpia Chavit. You have a stone that's left on top of a barrel of wine. Matel Tzida Vino Felet. You can tip the barrel over and have the stone fall off. Again, you have a stone that was left on top of the barrel. You can have a problem of Basis Li Davara Asur. This Isur becomes a problem. So what you have to do is you have to tip it over to dump the stone off, and then you can pick up the barrel. Now really, if it was a Basis Li Davara Asur, then the barrel would become Asur. And then you could even pick up the barrel. That the Gemara will get to. That's the qualification, the first line in the Gemara that we also had early in the Masechta. There's only a case be shocheach when he forgets it there. If he intentionally puts the rock there, then you have muksa, and it becomes a basis l'davar asur. You can't move it. It's only when he forgot the rock there that it does not become a basis l'davar asur, and therefore you could tilt the head there, tilt the minatzad to dump the stone off the barrel. Eitah ben achaviot. What happens if this barrel is in the cellar amongst many other barrels? Well, if that's the case, you can't just dump the rock off. That's going to land on another barrel and cause damage or burst the other barrel that's there. So what you have to do is, magbia, pick up the barrel, matel tzida. So you're allowed, we give you a dispensation to lift it out of that area and then to tip it to dump the stone off of it. Right, now we have the latter half of this Mishnah, which was quoted in the previous Gemara, which is, ma'ot shalakar. You leave money on a pillow. Mina eret akar veino float. You can shake them off the pillow and they fall off, and then you can take the pillow. Hayta alav lishleshet. If it has dirt on it, the pillow has any type of dirt that is ma'us on it, mikancha bismartut. You'll have to wipe it off with a cloth. Hayta shel or. If the pillow was made out of leather, notin alav mayim achitichle. You can wash it down with water. You can't rub it off, but you can push water on it because leather does not get cleaned with water. It's not absorbent, so we don't worry about libun or wandering on Shabbat when you pour water onto leather. What's obvious from here is that the previous case was not a case where you could put water on it. When you have the smartut, you can just wipe off the item. You cannot put water on there to soak it out because that would be a problem of libun. Shriyato v'mayim is kibuso. So you can't put water on the pillow that has this miyus in it. You can simply just wipe off the surface, whatever's on the surface. Amar avun amar av, so this is what we discussed in the Mishnah. Lo shono lo shocheach. That's only true when he forgets the rock on the barrel. V'minyach, if he intentionally places there, naseh basis l'davar ha'asur. Then it becomes a basis l'davar ha'asur. How much in front of Shabbat you need to have put it there intentionally is a good question. According to, I think, the Chumata Deshin, he thinks that if you put it there before Shabbat, even if it was way before Shabbat, that makes it into a davar isur, and you're really mevatel it from your mind. You're mevatel the kli from your mind, and therefore it's a basis l'davar ha'asur. Many of the other poskim in the Magen Avraham, I think, disagrees with this Chumata Deshin and says that if you left it there, if you put it there on Thursday, Wednesday or Thursday, and then you forgot about it, that's the equivalent of forgetting it. Just because you put it there originally intentionally doesn't mean that you didn't forget it going into Shabbat. So the intentional placement is not the be-all end-all. It depends how much before Shabbat that was. If it's far enough before Shabbat, you could forget that you put it there intentionally, then it becomes shocheach and not placing there. And obviously it has a big impact in terms of isur. If you plan on putting an item there that's going to stay there through Shabbat, then it's definitely a basis l'davar asur. So if you put your wallet or your money in a certain location, you always put it there and it's going to stay through Shabbat, you can't say, oh, I forgot my wallet there. That's your intent to put it there, even if you put it there way before Shabbat. Oh, that's all right. So why isn't it a basis l'davar asur mutar over here? Why don't we say that? So that's a question that is difficult to deal with. One of the answers that's given is either you view the cover to the barrel separately than the barrel, and the cover is the rock on it, and the cover has no heter on it. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is that in order to gain access to the wine, you have to take the cover off, and therefore the rock is more significant than the wine at this point in time because you need the access through the cover, and you're going to have to move the cover with the rock on it independent of the wine. Okay, Mantana, Tehorecha Diki Surave Tera. Who's the Tana that says whenever you have a choice between engaging in Easter and heter, we can engage with the heter and we don't engage with the isur. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. It's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Because over here you have a choice. You could either take the rock off and get rid of the problem, or you could pick up the barrel, tip the barrel over, and then dump the rock and get rid of the muksa. So the way Rashi phrases it, in terms of tircha, in terms of effort, it'd be much easier to just take the rock off. It'd be less involved, and it would be a simpler solution. Yet, over here, we're telling you, pick up the barrel and dump the rock. Do what is harder in order to not engage with the sewer. So that's the Gemara's question, or point, according to Rashi, is that Gemara is suggesting to do more effort, to do much more in the way of getting rid of the isur rather than just dealing with the isur. So Gemara here suggests that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel did not. Borer kidnit b'yom tov. Someone who's doing borer on legumes on yom tov. B'chamayom im borer ochel v'ochel. The first one being a noun and the second one being a verb. So you borer ochel, that you separate out the edible stuff, v'ochel, and then you eat it. You do it like normally. We normally do it, you can pull out what seems to be the psolet. You take out the psolet, and then you can eat the ochel. V'tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, v'med dvarim amurim. Let me explain you this machloka between Beit Hillel and Shammai. Ochel k'merubah l'psolet, it's a case where the food exceeds the psolet. When the food exceeds the psolet, then Beit Hillel says, you can take off the psolet. And Beit Shammai says, still take out the ochel. On the other hand, if the item that you don't want is in excess of the item that you do want, divrei akol borer ochel, that you take out the ochel. Where it says, va'ahacha, the ochel meruba ala psolet, dami. Our case is a case where it's as if there's more ochel than psolet. Hachanami came into iboy lemishkal, lo mishtakal le'yayin ha'deshaka lo le'evin, psolet meruba ala ochel dami. So the Gemara first suggests that this is parallel to that braita that we had in Beitza. Over here, our case is you have the wine and you have the stone. Right? The wine is much more than the stone. The ochel is meruba al psolet. If that's the case, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel suggests that we have a heter from Shimon Gamliel that you should take off the rock on top, because then you deal with the item that requires less tircha, and it's the lesser of the two items. So why not, in that case, allow you to take the rock off? Why don't we allow you to take the rock off instead of picking up the barrel? That's the Gemara's question, because we have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says deal with heter, not with isur. And when we say deal with heter, not the isur, that is qualified by the question of which is more. If the heter is less, then we demand that you deal with the heter. If the heter is more, we allow you to take off the psolet and not worry about it and engage with the psolet. So also here, where the ochel, the wine and barrel, the whole thing is much greater than the evin and the stones that there, let him just take the stone off and engage in the psolet and then remove it. The Gemara's answer is no, that's not the case here, because since you cannot gain access to the wine until you take off the stone, it's kipsolet ruv al ochel. Because of this situation of, or where the stone is situated, it grants it more significance or a greater quantity in a sense, but even though it's not quantitatively bigger, but it grants it as if it's quantitatively bigger, because in order to access the wine, you have to go through the stone. So therefore, Rashi says it's as if the psolet is greater than the ochel over here. So therefore, we demand of you to do more. Do more to get it out, which is even Beit Hillel agreed. When the psolet is greater than the ochel, you take the ochel out. So over here, you have to pick up the barrel and not the stone. That's the position of Rashi, and that's why Rashi learns it. Tosafot rejects this understanding of Rashi. It says, Veinu near the Ri. He says, and then Rashi ends up changing the girsa in our Gemara. You see that little aleph there. By the Mishkal, lo mishtakal le'yayin, ad shakal le'evin. Rashi takes out ad shakal le'evin. Piece of the Gemara entirely because of his way explaining the Gemara. So now, near the Veinu Tam. Dechi ochel merubal psolet, hava psolet kebotel legabe rubo. He says, whenever you have the ochel being greater than the psolet, the reason you're allowed to touch the psolet is because the psolet is batel to the heter. You have more heter, less psolet. So now psolet is no longer psolet. Because now everything becomes quote-unquote ochel, because the ochel is the greater in the number, and the psolet is batel to the ochel. So then it's batel to gavi rubo mutar litlo min ochel lezorko. And that's why you're allowed to take it out. For here, why don't we say the same thing? If the wine and the wine barrel are the greater quantity here, the stone's the smaller thing, then it should be batel the gabe the wine barrel. It's batel the gabe the wine barrel. The stone should no longer be muksa to pick up. It's batel, and you should be able to just throw the stone away and be fine. The answer to the Gemara is no. Because the stone is blocking access to the item, it is the item that you have to get through to get there. The stone takes on added significance, and it's not batel to the wine. It's not batel to the barrel because it is blocking access. And if that's the case, it retains its shame muksa, and that's why you can't take it out. And you have to pick up the barrel and dump it. That's the way Tosafot learns the sugya. He says that whole sugya in Beitza is determining whether something is muksa or problematic based on whether it's batel. Psolet is definitely batel to the ochel. If that's the case, you could throw the psolet out because it's not really muksa anymore. In our case too, it should be the same thing. The wine, the barrel, should make the stone batel, should make it insignificant, you should be able to throw away the stone. The answer to the Gemara is that the stone takes on added significance here because of its location, of where it's situated. Haita ben achaviot magbiat. As amongst the other barrels, you can lift it up. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, haita achavit munechet botzar. It's in a cellar. Oshia klei zuchuchid munuchim tachtea. Or you have glass utensils around it. Magbial makom acher omatel tzida. You don't just pick it up here and dump it right there and then break the other barrels or the glass that's around it. You're allowed to pick it up, move it to a different location where it's safe to dump the stone, and then you dump the stone. Vino felet. Vinotel emena mashe tzarich lo makzira lem koma. And then you can take out whatever wine you need and put the barrel back where you got it from originally. Again, just a corollary or an extension of our Mishnah. And once you have it up and you're moving it, move it to where you want it. Don't dump the rock on things that are going to get ruined by it. Ma'ot sha'al akar. You have money that's on a pillow. Amrav chia barashi amrav. Lo shano elo bishokheach. That's only true again where he forgot the money on the pillow. Alval be'meniach. If you placed it there intentionally, nasei basis ledavar asur. Then it becomes a basis ledavar asur. Amar Rabbi Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Lo Shano Elo Litzorach Gufo. This is what we quoted in the previous Gemara. It's only true if you need the pillow. If you're after getting the pillow, then we tell you dump the money, and take the pillow. Aval tzarach mikdomo. If you want where the pillow and the money is, then without the lobo, then alav. You carry the pillow, keep the money on top, and move everything out of here. Chayin tani chia barav midifte l'shano l'tzarach kufo. Aval tzarach mikdomo without the lobo, then alav. So the same din that was just mentioned by Rabbi Rechana in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, ma'o chalakar min ha'er. Amar Rabbi Hoshaya, shakach arnaki b'chatzer. If you left your wallet out in the chatzer, meniach alei kikaru tinok, you can put a loaf of bread or a child on it, umetaltala, and then bring it back. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, shakach leveina b'chatzer, you left out a brick in the chatzer, meniach alei kikaru tinok, umetaltala, you put on bread on it or a tinok on it, then you can carry it in. Amar Rabbi Yehuda b'shila, Amar Rabbi Asi, pamachat, shachudiskiya mleya ma'ot b'sartia. They left out a huge basket or sack of money out in the Sratio. Rashi says it's a Rishut Rabim. Ubao b'sholu et Rabbi Yochanan. And they asked Rabbi Yochanan what to do. V'amar lehen, nichu alea kikar tinok v'til tulua. Put a kikar tinok on it and carry it in. Obviously, if it's in Rishut Rabim, they have to do it pachat pachat midal adamot. They have to make michitza bnei adam. They have to do it in some way that they were allowed to carry it in. Amar marzutra hilchata kohani shmaitata b'shocheach. This is all true when you forgot the item there. But if it was intentionally left there, you can't change its status on Shabbat. This is adding the kikar and tinok after the fact is not going to help you. If you're shocheach, put the heter on it and we allow you to move it. Ravashi says, "Lo amru kikar tinok ala meit bilvad." The only time we allow you on Shabbat put a kikar and tinok on something to move it is when we're dealing with the mate that we saw earlier in the Masechta. In order to carry the mate out, you put a kikar and tinok on top of it, and then you can carry the mate out. And that dispensation is only for kvod abriyot, which is the mate. But other than that, we don't allow that dispensation to be used on Shabbat. Baya manach kapa akipe. Baya placed a spoon on top of these bundles, because the bundles are muksa, and he puts the spoon on top of them to make them into heter. And Rava manach sakina bar yona. He put a knife on top of fowl, raw yona meat that was outside. Umetatla and carried it in. I'm Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, who's a Bayez Rebbe, says, kama harifa shmaita tadarki. These guys, these young guys think they're really smart, that they put this stuff on it and then carry it in. That's only true when you forget the item there. But if you put it there intentionally, you can't carry it in, even if you put heter on top of it afterwards. If I wasn't some person of stature, kapa kipe lomali, I wouldn't have to put this spoon on top of the bundles anyway. Because they are ru'uim to sit on them. Bundles are useful to sit on Shabbat. Because we've seen earlier in the Masechta that people use them to sit on. The only reason they're not significant over here is because Bayu is a person of stature and he wouldn't sit on these items. Whether it's a brick or whether it's a bundle of straw or something like that, he wouldn't sit on it. Other people would use them as seats, as a prop to sit up on. He wouldn't do that because of his stature. So he was just doing l'fnim mishur tadin. He put some heter on there to move it. But technically, it really was mutar to move even without doing that. He just didn't want to be matir in front of people. Am Rav Ana ilav d'adam chashuv ana sakina bar yona lomale. Why do I have to put a knife on top of this meat? Hachazilil umtza. I could eat it raw. If I could eat the bird meat raw, then it's not muksan Shabbat. I don't have to put heter on it to move it. But because of his stature, he didn't eat it. Taima de chazil umtza. Alo chazil umtza lo. From what Rav is suggesting is that only if you would eat it raw would it be mutar to move it on Shabbat. If you wouldn't eat it raw, then it wouldn't be. The memra. The Ravok Rabbi Yehuda Svirle. You see even here is that Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda in Muksa, that he thinks that items can become Muksa on Shabbat. V'amar Rava l'shamei. Didn't Rava say to his servant, Tavali baravza, roast me up a goose on Yom Tov, v'shadei mei l'shunra, and then throw out its intestines or its internal organs to the cats to eat. So now, that's a problem, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, if something was designated for Ochel Adam, that was made for a person's food going into Shabbat, you can't then say on Shabbat, I'm giving this to the animals. Because it belonged to, made for human consumption, that was its designation. If you want to change its designation on Shabbat, you have no lot here. You're making something a change in it, and you can't do that. Rashi says over here, why did Rava give it to the cats and not just eat it? Why didn't, it was made for human consumption. Why didn't he just eat it? Why did he throw it away to the cats? So Rashi says something very interesting. He says, it's not a Yom Tov food. It's a weekday food. It's not really for Yom Tov, and therefore he didn't eat it. It's very interesting Rashi that says, that because it's not roi for Yom Tov, then it falls out of the category of being mukhan le'adam. And since it's not mukhan le'adam, it's also not mukhan le'klavim, for the animals. We have that principle that if an item, when it's coming into Shabbat, is not edible or ready for human consumption, you have this outside variable, which is called Yom Tov, and this is not a food of Yom Tov. Since that isur is preventing it from being edible for humans, it's considered to be muksa even for animals, because its being inedible is not governed by the fact that it's rotten and you would give it to the behemah. It's simply because of the isur of Shabbat or Yom Tov. That's Rashi's interpretation. Others believe that that's not the issue over here, but that since it will go bad, or since it's an item that normally goes bad very quickly, and since it was Ro'oi Li'adam when you came into Shabbat, and almost immediately it became not Ro'oi Li'adam, you can't switch it over to become Ro'oi Le'Behemah. So whether you think it's the explanation of Rashi or the explanation of Tosafot, what you see from here is that Rava does not worry about this issue of Muksa. He's allowing Muksa to be given to the cats. That must obviously mean that he does not hold like Rabbi Huda, but rather like Rabbi Shimon. This isn't the problem of Muksa, and that's why he can throw it to the cats. So Atam came into Misrach, Datei Ilavei Metmo. Gemara says, no.
He knew already
that he wasn't going to eat it on Yom Tov, because since it normally goes bad or rotten on Yom Tov, then he assumes that he's not going to eat it. And then even before Yom Tov, he had in mind to give it to the animals. Never entered the realm of human consumption. So Akhanami Mistavra, that makes sense. The Rava can Rabbi Yehuda Sfirle. The Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The Darish Rava, Isha lo tikanes le beit ha'itzim li tol mehen ud. A woman should not go into the wood house, to the wood storage house, and take out a poker to use on Yom Tov. Ud shenishbar asur la'asiko b'Yom Tov. And a poker that breaks on Yom Tov, you cannot put it into the fire, you can't use it as firewood. Lefi shemesiki mekelim ve'emesiki meshivrei kelim shvamina. The reason is because you're only allowed to mesik, you're only allowed to stoke the fire or put as lighting into the fire kelim, which were mukhan from before Yom Tov, but shivrei kelim, which are nolad on Yom Tov, that's muksa, and muksa you can't engage with, you can't use on Yom Tov. So you see from here that this woman is not allowed to do this because of a problem of muksa, and Rava is the one making the statement. So it must be that he holds like Rabbi Yehuda of muksa, not like Rabbi Shimon when there is no muksa. The problem of this ud, of breaking off the ud, Rashi says that stam etzim la'sakan itnu v'lo l'tiltul. Rashi says the problem of muksa. The etzim are made for putting into the fire, not to use as a poker. So you're taking something that's muksa. Others suggest that that's not the problem, like Tosafot, near the Reino Tan, compared to Shalach HaGadolot, Asir Mishum Tikune Mano. When you break off the piece to make it to the right size of a poker, you're making a keli on Yom Tov. And that's the problem here. It's not a problem of muksa, it's a problem of Metakin Kli, or Nirek Metakin Kli. And that's why you can't take out the poker. So this has nothing to do with muksa. It's the second half of that statement of Rava that proves that he holds a muksa, not that first piece of the statement. Okay, we'll stop over here.